You're listening to the Quince Podcast.
Does a bona fide negative opinion about the country's highest court amount to contempt of court? How should the Supreme Court react to criticisms against itself? Is it time to revisit the contempt of courts clause? Does it go against the freedom of speech under Article 19 of the Constitution?
You're listening to The Big Story, the podcast where we dissect the headline-making news for you. And I'm your host, Shorbury.
The Supreme Court's suo motu contempt petition against advocate Prashant Bhushan over some of his tweets has raised a lot of debates and a lot of questions. Even the legal fraternity is divided on it. At least 10 retired judges, including Justice Taylor Meshwar, AP Shah, Madan B. Lokur, they're all in solidarity with Mr. Bhushan on this. So is it an archaic law? What kind of arguments are being made? What kind of criticism is the contempt petition drawing? To discuss all this, joining me in this podcast is Vakasha Sachdev, the Quince legal editor. Hi, Vakasha.
Hi, Shabri.
Just a little disclaimer for our listeners before we begin. As you can tell from the audio quality, we're recording this podcast over a call due to the inaccessibility of a recording studio at the moment. So the audio quality isn't going to be that great, but I hope you do stay tuned till the end of the podcast. So, Vakasha, over the last decade, advocate Prashant Bhushan has maintained his advocacy for judicial accountability. Often, he's painstakingly cited the specific cases of corruption that led him to his opinions on certain judges and the functioning of the Supreme Court. And that has also, we've seen, sometimes draw the ire of the judiciary. And currently, there is not one but two contempt proceedings against him. One that we know is from the recent tweets about the Supreme Court's quote-unquote role in destroying India's democracy and on CJI Bobde. And the second contempt case, which is from 2009 and has been revived now, has to do with an interview that Mr. Bhushan had given to the Tehelka magazine, where he claimed that half of India's CJIs were corrupt, right?
Yeah.
So let's start with that case first. We know that that was heard last in 2012, and some are seeing the revival of this case right now so urgently as an intimidation tact. So is there anything curious you think about the timing of the revival of this case?
I do find it quite curious, because it's important to note that this, in fact, so the news of the new suo motu case being listed came first. So that came on 21st July. Suddenly we were told, boom, this is going to be heard tomorrow itself. So that was a bit curious. And then within a couple of hours, they were like, yeah, and also, we're also going to be hearing this other case, which was last heard, as you said, back in 2012. 2 days after that, on 24th July. Now, this was very curious that you're suddenly bringing this up, especially because when this case was last heard in 2012, Bhushan's then lawyer, Ram Jethmalani, had made an argument that there was going to be serious issues of constitutional importance involved here, because you were going to have to look at the right to freedom of speech and to what extent you can have a bona fide opinion about even very serious charges against judges and then express that. Now, the courts kind of agreed that there was going to be a need to look at this, and which was why this case has been sitting on the back burner for so long, because otherwise it would have just been resolved, right? The fact that it sat for so long is actually because of that. So the fact that it was suddenly now revived with just a bench of three judges did not seem to make a lot of sense, especially since there was not a discussion to have a larger bench do it. Now, today there have been there was a very, very curious incident in that case. That case was heard today again, and the judge actually heard very brief arguments from Bhushan's now lawyer, Rajiv Dhawan, and then said, you know what, we're going to talk to you in private, and had this whole conversation which was kept away from, because normally now all these proceedings are taking place on video conference, everyone can see it, you have your mics on, everything was switched off, the judges did a separate private phone call with Dhawan, and then at the end they're like, okay, we're reserving judgment, and now the order has come up, they've said we're receiving some statements from Tehelka and from Bhushan. If we see that these statements and these explanations are okay, then we'll drop the case. Otherwise, if we don't think they're good enough, we'll have to continue. You know, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Bhushan, the same statement Bhushan's giving now is effectively what he said back then as well. So really, it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to bring up this case suddenly when you know that there are these big constitutional questions involved. So either you have to say we're willing to hear those, or why take this up at this time?
Right. So now moving on to the current contempt proceedings, the Supreme Court, as we know, recently issued a notice to Mr. Bhushan for his tweets against the CJI S.A. Bobde, which they held to be in contempt of the court. There are actually two tweets in concern regarding this. Neither are available on Twitter right now. I'm just going to try to summarize what they stated. One was from 27 June, where Advocate Bhushan had written about the quote-unquote role of the Supreme Court in the destruction of democracy in the last 6 years, and quote-unquote particularly the role of the last four CJIs in it. And one from 29th June, which was tweeted with a photo of CJI Bobde on a Harley-Davidson during the lockdown period, where he had questioned the CJI for riding a bike without a helmet and not wearing a face mask at a time when the Supreme Court was, quote, denying citizens their fundamental right to access justice, end quote, because it was in a lockdown mode. Now, Advocate Bhushan has come out with a very, very detailed response in his reply affidavit to the Supreme Court's contempt case against him, where he's defended himself and argued why his statements are not in contempt of court. And we'll come to that in just a bit. But Vikasha, can you tell me exactly what is defined as scandalizing the court?
So this is a short answer because there isn't a lot of clear definition on this. It's basically a concept left to the discretion of judges. Because when you look at the way the concept of contempt of court has come up over the years and evolved in English jurisprudence in their common law, the idea was that what you wanted was to stop people from making a mockery of the courts, because that would stop the courts from being able to do their job. So essentially, if you have a situation where people don't respect the courts, they're not going to follow the court's orders. So that's the basis on which you have these concepts of contempt of court coming. So you have civil contempt these days is like the obvious, the basic thing of that, where someone refuses to obey an order. Criminal contempt has three prongs to it. It traditionally had three prongs, and in India, we still have those. Two of those are very obvious. So one is that, okay, look, if you're interfering with a case, so suppose you're commenting that, oh, the judge in this case, who's hearing this case right now, he knows that the accused and the accused of this and the accused, you know, that can count as contempt. Or where you're doing something where you're in the background pretending to be commenting on something, but actually going to affect the way a case is going to go forward. So, you know, a lot of the things, for instance, happening with the Sushant Singh Rajput case could possibly come under that concept. And the third is the scandalizing the court thing, which is the sort of last relic of that time when you basically didn't want people to mock it for that. Nowadays, most jurisdictions have recognized that goes against the fundamental right to freedom of speech. Because as long as you're not obviously saying something really, really terrible, it doesn't make, in fact, even if you are saying something really mean about the court, scandalizing the court is too vague a concept. And that's something which over the years, the judges have also, the Supreme Court have looked at and said, look, we have to interpret it in terms of that aspect of administration of justice. If it's just criticism of us, it should not count as that. Or at least we shouldn't use the power against that, even if technically our discretion is wide enough to include it within that.
And the UK has also struck down this bit, right?
Yeah, they've struck down this bit because they've obviously kept the part where you're saying someone disobeys the court or, you know, messes with the way a criminal trial is going. But this aspect of it is too problematic, especially because at the end of the day, the person who is going to get to decide whether or not a particular criticism of a judge or the court is contempt is the court. It's the same judge himself or herself is going to be sitting and looking at that. And that's a basic violation of the principle of natural justice. You know, if you're going to be the one who's going to sit and decide, okay, this comment about me goes beyond an insult and is now something more serious, it shouldn't be you. It should be an objective judge doing that. But here, actually, the judges themselves get to do it.
Now, coming to Prashant Bhushan's detailed affidavit, a big question that he's raising through this is, does a bona fide negative opinion about the Supreme Court amount to contempt of court? Now, Bhushan said that he's regretted only a part of what he tweeted about, and he said, I did not notice that the bike was on a stand and therefore wearing a helmet was not required. But he said that he stands by everything else.
Yeah.
Now, he's also argued that his tweets are his bona fide impression of the way the court had been functioning in the last few years when it comes to transparency, and that, quote, such expression of opinion, however outspoken, disagreeable, or however unpalatable to some, cannot constitute as contempt of court, end quote. Yeah. So along with that, I believe he's also asserted his right to free speech, right?
Mm-hmm.
Since we're seeing a lot of former judges also throwing their weight behind Bhushan, is it time to perhaps revisit the contempt of courts clause? Or is there a thin line between the right to free speech and what constitutes as scandalizing the court?
I think, look, the other aspects of contempt, I think, as I said, are reasonable. They really come to the point of what it's all about. But this concept of scandalizing the court, it's just too vague. And it's become this kind of blanket thing which stops people from offering any sort of critique or criticism of the court. And that's a big problem. And I think that's why Bhushan is absolutely right. Because if you look at the defense he's offered here in this affidavit, he has got a list. It's a laundry list of, you know, all the things which have gone wrong with the way the court has functioned in the last few years. And he's restricted to the last four CGIs. As what's interesting is if you look at that 2009 case, he's talking about the last 16 CGIs, half of them being corrupt back then. You know, so it's not that he's just doing this out of the blue. He's been talking about this for ages. And he's doing it with a set of reasoning. And now when you come to these last four, like the list is truly quite horrifying. And, you know, if you look at the piece we've done on the Quint about this affidavit, we've linked you, in fact, to all the pieces we've also done at the Quint about those instances. And it is truly quite shocking because you've got instances where the courts are not listening to habeas corpus petitions urgently. And habeas corpus petitions are basically the lifeblood of liberty in a constitution. They're not doing that. You have situations where the court is just accepting anything the government says in sealed covers without even bothering to question it. When that's the whole point of having judicial review is for the courts to look and see what is the executive doing? Are they following the law? If the courts aren't going to do that, how are they fulfilling their responsibility to the constitution or to the people? Judges are not accountable to anyone. Judges can only be removed by the judges themselves, by the Supreme Court collegium. And the collegium itself can only be removed. The Supreme Court or High Court judges can only be given any punishment through impeachment, which has a huge process through Parliament. Are we saying truly that these judges are infallible, that they don't get anything wrong, and that we can never criticize them? So Bhushan, Arun Shori and Ram, they're actually challenging, now they've filed a separate petition, challenging that aspect of the Contempt of Courts Act and to the extent it's in the Supreme Court rules as well, and saying that this cannot be there because it clearly goes against the concept of having a reasonable restriction on freedom.
You've written a very detailed piece to, dissect Prashant Bhushan's detailed response. But can you, give us a few takeaways from, his defense of himself, the short few takeaways?
So I think what he's done is he's pointed out, he's built his premise, which is that, look, there is, in fact, a duty on citizens to raise, if they see the judges are behaving the wrong way, or they see there's corruption, they see there's a problem with things, there's a duty on citizens to raise their voices about it. And he's explained that, I think, quite well. He's then gone on to look at the Supreme Court precedent on freedom of speech, which has clearly said over the years that, it must be exercised cautiously. It shouldn't be used to just save the standing of the judiciary. You can't use this to clamp down on criticism. It must be used to ensure that justice can be administered properly. This clampdown on cases like this, using the concept of scandalizing the court, is not helping justice. It's only stopping criticism. And there are multiple judgments of the Supreme Court which said that even if that criticism is marginally overzealous, even if it is a little bit over the top, as long as it's bona fide, as long as it's in good faith, it should still be acceptable. And, he's given, I think, he's then gone on to explain exactly why he's come up with this opinion. So he first explains why he thinks democracy in India is dead, using the arguments made by two Harvard professors in their book and a lot of articles, how democracies die. So he's explained how, the BJP government at the center has undertaken a systematic attack on democracy in India, in his opinion, or based on, again, but it's not just him sitting on a bench and thinking of it. He's basing it on this academic work which exists by these two Harvard professors. He's then looked at the fact that, the Supreme Court has to, the whole point of things which the Supreme Court has said over the years is they have to prevent those kind of things going downhill. They have to stop these kind of assaults on institutions. They have to stop the attacks on democracy. And if they aren't doing that, which he then goes on, he uses over 40 annexures, news reports, court orders, opinion articles, official documents, affidavits, all of this to explain why he's showing that the court has failed. And the examples are very, very pointed and very, very important. So it ranges from the way the Kalikapul suicide case was handled by CJI Kher, the first of the four CJIs who he's got a problem with. And Kalikapul, that time there was, if you remember, the suicide note by him accused Kher himself of being involved in a corruption racket to get favorable. Then, of course, CJI Mishra, everyone remembers that press conference where you had four sitting judges of the Supreme Court saying, questioning the way he was assigning cases. Right. I mean, it's not about an individual sitting and having an opinion. You had judges of the court who are privy to what's going on there, who are privy to the collegium's discussions, saying there's assignment of cases without any logical basis. And that's, again, this is not new. When Justice Gogoi was asked at that press conference, is one of the cases you're concerned about the Judge Loya case and the way it had been assigned? At that time, guess who had been assigned the case? Justice Arun Mishra. So that's the point, right? You have a situation where there's one judge who's, of course, the common thread through it, and yet he's the one now who's hearing the contempt cases against Bhushan. It's actually, again, another perfect example of the very things which Bhushan is pointing out in his affidavit is at play in the bench which is hearing this contempt case.
So whichever way the hearings go, do you think it'll set a big precedent for the future?
Well, the thing is, it's going to depend what happens now. Now that Bhushan's filed this very detailed affidavit, if the case gets taken up on merits, then yes, obviously, it will be one for the future. The worry, of course, is again that, you know, now faced with such a detailed response, if the judges now are likely to have to consider again that whole question of referring these issues to a larger bench. And if that happens, obviously, it's going to get delayed. In the meanwhile, there is a risk that even without that happening, we could see the three judge bench, which is currently sitting, just pass, maybe not pass an order which is not great. So, for instance, today, Justice Arun Mishra, in the other contempt case, wanted to pass an order based on the explanation and statements given that, okay, we're dropping the case. And henceforth, anyone who says anything about corruption in the judiciary is committing contempt of court. Now, that's ridiculous. And that goes against exactly what needs to be discussed in these cases. So, I think the problem is that until and unless we get that larger bench hearing this case, I have a suspicion that we're not going to get a good precedent which can be used for the future. What we can see, however, I think, and what people should take forward is that if you are ever accused of this, and you know, this kind of thing is being used against you, if you have done your homework like Bhushan has here, mm-hmm. and you've made sure that you've been, you know, you've got a lot of research behind your opinion, you should and can come out swinging and hold your ground. And I think that's going to be very, very important going ahead. Obviously, it's easier for someone like a Bhushan to do. But, you know, there are lawyers who will take this up and defend your right to freedom of speech. There are, Bhushan himself will be one of those who will be willing to do it for you. And the lawyers who are representing him now and others will, because this is a key issue of freedom of speech. And it's something which we cannot afford as citizens to let go. As Bhushan has argued in his petition, some things are more important. Some things are, you know, it's about a principle. There are moments, and it's a great quote where he says, you know, there are moments in history when higher principles must trump routine obligations, when saving the constitutional order must come before personal and professional niceties, when considerations of the present must not come in the way for discharging our responsibility towards the future. I think that's what we can take away at this time, regardless of where this case ends up.
If you like listening to this episode, please subscribe to the Big Story playlist for episodic updates. We'll have on Apple, Google Podcast, Spotify, JioSaavn, and most of the other popular podcast streaming platforms. For other podcasts, please log on to the Quinn website and check out the podcast section. For any feedback, shoot an email to podcasts@thequinn.com.
Thanks for listening. Log on to the Quinn's website and check out our other podcasts.